Good morning. We will proceed with the next case on our calendar today, which is A20-0527, Tammy Ann Harris, and on behalf of Margaret M. Banks versus Richard Mark Gellerman. Respondent in this matter did not file a brief, so pursuant to the order issued in this case, we will only be hearing oral argument from appellant. We are hearing oral argument by Zoom today, as you know, pursuant to pandemic-related court orders. Counsel will have 15 minutes for your oral argument. There won't be any rebuttal because there is no respondent appearing today. The marshal will be keeping the time. There's a screen with a phone that shows your time, sir. If there's any technical difficulties, we will stop the clock and restart it once those are resolved. This oral argument is being recorded by the Court of Appeals, so I will ask that you introduce yourself and identify the party you represent at the start of your argument. And you can go ahead and proceed when you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Bruce Petrowski of Restovich Brown & Associates, and I represent Richard Gellerman, the appellant in this matter. This is an appeal of the determination of the court, district court, to issue a harassment restraining order against my client on behalf of Tammy Ann Harris, the guardian of Margaret Banks, and on behalf of Margaret Banks. Appellant seeks reversal of the order granting the HRO on the grounds that the evidence did not support the order in that it did not present sufficient evidence to meet the definition of harassment for either of the respondents. In the case of Ms. Banks, the evidence was insufficient to determine that she was, that these visits were uninvited. As concerns Ms. Harris, there was no evidence of repeated contacts with her employer with the intent to adversely affect her security, privacy, et cetera, to the statute. Finally, this is a unique case in that, well, perhaps not unique, but it's certainly not the usual case in which we're dealing with an HRO brought on behalf of a person under a guardianship. And the court did not take into account sufficiently Ms. Banks' rights as a person under a guardianship pursuant to Minnesota Statute Section 524.5-120. The Court of Appeals reviews District Court's grant of harassment restraining order under an abuse of discretion standard. Its findings of fact won't be set aside unless clearly erroneous and due regard is given to the District Court's opportunity to review or to judge the credibility of witnesses. However, the court will reverse the issuance of a restraining order if it's not supported by sufficient evidence.
So, Mr. Petrowski, if I may, I just first have a couple of technical questions for you, just which will help us, I think, evaluate the sufficiency of the evidence. One, in your brief, you talk about the fact that in the March 4th hearing, Ms. Banks was in the courthouse and available to testify. I mean, is that part of the record?
Yes, I believe that the court asked Ms. Harris whether, well, the court acknowledged that Ms. Banks was in the courtroom or in the courthouse, but not in the courtroom. That was at the beginning of the March 4th hearing. And at one point, Ms. Harris left the courtroom to confer with Ms. Banks and came back in and reported to the court that Ms. Banks was, quote, well, not quote, but my recollection is something to the effect that she was scared to testify. So she was there, she didn't testify.
So another more technical question, but the underlying guardianship order, you know, look at the appellate level, at least it's not in our record. You know, it's the original petition for the HRO, if you're doing it on behalf of someone who's subject to guardianship, you're supposed to attach it. You know, we don't see it in our record. On the other hand, I note that Judge Marks at that late February hearing referred to Ms. Banks being subject to, you know, full guardianship. So, I mean, you were there. Was there a copy at the hearings of the guardianship order? Because I do think, looking at the Bill of Rights issues that you raised and Ms. Banks, you know, former counsel raised, you don't want to have the guardianship order there to evaluate, right?
Okay. First, that's very possibly a point that should have been addressed at the lower court level. Just to clarify, I have been retained on the appeal. I was not, I did not represent Mr. Gellerman in the underlying case, as it probably would have been a shorter hearing. But I apologize.
I forgot that.
And so, no, I don't believe that the order itself was entered into the record at either hearing. I believe my recollection of the first hearing before Judge Mark is that perhaps he took judicial notice of the fact that there was another proceeding in a different county. The guardianship arose out of Wabasha County.
So, Mr. Petrowski, from your perspective, what should the district court judge have done in the March 4th hearing? That at that point, Ms. Banks had dismissed her lawyer, but she's in the courthouse. How should that have proceeded?
Well, I think it should have proceeded with at least Ms. Banks being inquired as to in court as to whether she wished to testify or not. And if she declined to do so, that presents a problem from my perspective as to the quantity of evidence as to supporting a finding of harassment. The specific finding of the court that there are reasonable grounds to believe that my client had engaged in harassment was that he had made uninvited visits to the petitioner as follows. Visits to care facility, December 2019 to present, to have contact with a vulnerable adult when prohibited by ward. That's just that the testimony that was presented demonstrated that Ms. Banks specifically prohibited him from attending, from visiting her. There's no evidence in the record of that. The evidence with respect to her not wanting him to visit her is the testimony of what she allegedly told her daughter, the guardian, Tammy Harris, and her sister, Donna Schoswold, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly, that she didn't want him to visit her. Their hearsay wasn't objected because everyone was pro se there. But nonetheless, that's what the testimony was as to how it was determined that these visits were uninvited or unwanted. There isn't any evidence that this desire that he not visit her was ever communicated to him during that time period, even though there is it.
I was asking, you know, procedurally, how should the district judge have handled this hearing? I mean, I'm not talking about just the evidence. And one of the reasons I'm asking you that is I was looking at the bottom of page 14 of your brief, and you say, kind of as a result of the actions taken after the first hearing, the ward was denied counsel for the second hearing to ensure that her wishes were taken into account. So I'm just trying to understand you by that. Are you saying she should have been awarded counsel because that's, you know, something she should get under the Bill of Rights? Are you saying that she should have brought into court, which I think I hear you saying. So I'm just trying to get an understanding of what you think should have happened procedurally.
Thank you for that clarification, Your Honor. Specifically speaking, I believe in cases where you're dealing with someone who is subject to a guardianship, as they are now described, formerly referred to as a ward, you really should be asking the ward if they want representation, because they're entitled to representation in any proceeding that concerns them and their status as a ward.
Mr. Petrowski, and I did read that provision of the Bill of Rights, but it doesn't say whether that's, you know, that she can have it if she can afford it or the court should appoint it. which is leading to my question about what should have happened.
Correct. I believe that it should have been specifically inquired of her as whether she wanted counsel. I'm familiar with the fact that in my practice, I do court-appointed work for wards, and they are routinely asked to whether or not they want counsel, and they can decline it or not decline it. She dismissed her previous counsel in this matter, but that doesn't necessarily, that may mean she was dissatisfied with him in some fashion. Doesn't mean she didn't want or would not have wanted after consideration counsel. So I think that's one of the problems in this matter, is that she had counsel at one point who submitted a motion on behalf and as well as an affidavit from her addressing the issues in the HRO. But once that counsel went away, she was essentially isolated from the court proceeding. She did not have an opportunity to make any input, and it would have been, I think it's pretty much mandated that she at least have the opportunity and be provided to the opportunity and to be made sure that she has had the opportunity to obtain counsel. Does that address your concern?
That does.
Mr. Piotrowski, I have a quick, this is Judge Cochran, I have a quick follow-up to Judge Jessen's question. There was also a pending motion on behalf of Ms. Banks, and it's my understanding that her attorney withdrew, but there isn't any indication that I'm aware of that the motion was withdrawn. Is that correct?
That's correct, and that's another, I think, consequence of the fact that we were dealing pro se representation in this matter, and that was switched from one judge to another, in that I think that was overlooked, that there was this pending motion disregarded basically by everyone who was there. And I don't think that was appropriate. It should have at least been addressed.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Petrowski, if I may, what are you asking this court to do as far as the HRO as it regards Ms. Banks? I think I understand with regard to Ms. Harris, your point is pretty straightforward, not repeated acts, it should be vacated.
Right.
But with regard to Ms. Banks, it seems part of it, should we be thinking about a remand to consider the motion and, you know, in accordance and with her rights under the Bill of Rights, as well as kind of looking at the HRO, should we be vacating? What specifically are you asking this court to do?
Correct. I believe that due to the failure of the evidentiary support for the finding in and of itself, that my client made uninvited visits to Ms. Banks, it should be vacated. However, that is certainly an option of the court to ask to remand to address the unaddressed motion and get input on that and maybe give her the opportunity to have counsel and present her view of the circumstances as opposed to the guardian's view of the circumstances. Does that satisfy your question?
Thank you for answering the question. And I realize we've asked several questions, so please, we want to hear from you as well.
I only have a couple of minutes left, so I believe we've addressed the issue of which was my primary, one of my concerns was the statute. And just for the court's perspective, I don't know if the court is aware that the statute 524.5120 has been amended in the meantime since the brief was submitted. Paragraph 10 has been significantly altered, and it is currently in effect for all guardianships established before, on, or after the effective date of the amendment, which was August 1st, 2020. Currently states that the person subject to the guardianship has the right to communicate, visit, or interact with others including receiving visitors or making or receiving telephone calls, personal mail or electronic communication, including through social media or participating in social activities, unless the guardian has good cause to believe restriction is necessary because interaction with the person poses a risk of significant physical, psychological, or financial harm to the person subject to the guardianship, and there is no other means to avoid the significant harm. In all cases, the guardian shall provide written notice of the restrictions imposed to the court, to the person subject to the guardianship, and to the person subject to the restrictions. The person subject to the guardianship or the person subject to the restrictions may petition the court to remove or modify the restrictions. This has a significant interaction, I believe, with the HRO statute in cases of wards, because it basically has a two-layer approach. First, you have to notify everyone of the restrictions, including the court. You have the opportunity to have a hearing as to whether those restrictions are appropriate pursuant to the ward statute. And then if the court determines that those are appropriate restrictions, then if the person subject to the restrictions violates them, then we have the potential for a possible HRO action. So in light of the legislature's current position with respect to that, I believe that it is even more imperative to address the guardianship / ward issue in this matter. And I believe I've run out of time.
You have. Thank you, Mr. Piotrowski. I do have one quick follow-up question for you. You would agree, wouldn't you, that that new language that you just read to us wasn't in effect at the time the judge made her decision in this case?
I agree that it was not in effect at that time.
But if we were to reverse and remand, it would be in effect with regard to it. Thank you. Well, thank you very much for answering all our questions and for your argument here today. We will take the matter under advisement and issue our decision within the statutory timeframe. And you are free to leave the Zoom hearing at this time.